Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, coming to you live from Denver, Colorado, the hometown, well, current residing town of Vince Russo, but sadly we're not getting together for lunch. It's a shame, I know, but unfortunately he may not have made it out alive. I am joined, though, by the figurative king of the Power Slam, my mentor, my good friend, Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well, Kenny. How is it in Denver? I mean, I know you're obviously very upset that you won't be catching up with Vince Russo on your trip, but apart from that, I mean, has it spoilt your trip? Hopefully it hasn't spoilt the journey.
It's not. I mean, yesterday when we arrived in Denver, it was -9.
Oof.
And then this morning it was -6, and now it's up to 11 degrees, and it's sunny. So I'm noticing that Denver is like... The weather is, I mean, you can literally go from -6 in the morning at 8 a.m. and by noon it's 11 degrees and sunny. So it's a bit of an adjustment to get to grips with it. But nice to have a couple of down days before I come back on, I fly home on Thursday. But this is my last international flight of the year. Then we'll get the Mick Foley shows coming up in December, and it's going to be, I'm going to have a bit of a rest. I'm quite excited about it.
Well, the planet says thank you.
Oh God! Look, I would fly a more efficient way if there was one available. Anyway, we'll not get into a fossil fuel debate here on the podcast this week.
Yeah, you were in Baltimore over the weekend. How did the panel go with the members of the Rhodes family?
It was very good. I hope that I'm going to give you my code, Finn, so you can watch it later on this week, and maybe we can talk about it next week. But okay. Yeah, no, I thought it went really well. It was a difficult interview, difficult to maneuver an interview with Cody, Brandy, and Dustin all together. So there's a lot of, you got to try and it's a lot of plates to juggle. But I thought it went really well. You know, I asked Brandy about the whole babyface heel thing, which I really wanted to bring up. Cody ended up maybe inadvertently saying that he thinks that John Cena has hair plugs, and. And then we had a run-in from Rio at one point. So it was a bit of a car crash, but it was a car crash in the best way. And I think people who were there got a good kick out of it, and they enjoyed it. It was really fun to be at StarCast. Got some really good content from some of the AEW stars. We've also got some content from Medusa, which is going to go up in the next few weeks. So, and I got a picture with RoboCop.
So, oh, yeah, I saw that one. Yeah, you and Ollie. The only problem is I think Ollie was taller than RoboCop, which kind of ruined the illusion.
So was I. I was like, Conrad, you couldn't have come up with a 6-foot RoboCop? Like, RoboCop was like 5'6" here. The guy who was playing RoboCop was very funny. He was walking about as RoboCop, pulling his gun out on people at points. And then he had a voice box to do the voice.
Oh, so fantastic.
It was no expense was spared. But yeah, always fun to go out and do these things. So I appreciate the invite and people who were nice enough to watch on Fight. So it's on Fight as well if you want to go check it. I think you can buy it as a solo, or you can... I think if you buy the StarCast 4 package, you get the first 3 StarCast, all their shows as well. So there's various options. But lots been happening in the wrestling world, Finn. Randy Orton has re-signed with WWE for 5 more years. I mean, I was thinking the other week, you know, Randy Orton looks like he feels so fresh in WWE, and he's got so many great fresh feuds ahead of him. I hope he re-signs.
Well, I think he's re-signed for a nice big fresh contract. That's what's fresh. Those $100 bills.
Those zeros are fresh.
Yeah, those zeros. I mean, he played a blinder, hasn't he? You know, hinting, implying, giving people reason to believe that he might defect to this company that's only been around a few months and whose ratings, let's face it, aren't doing that well. Will he defect to AEW because he's made a few comments on social media about how much he likes the product? Or will he re-sign with Vince McMahon for huge money, total stability? You know the company's going to be around in 5 years. You know it's going to be 7 figures. I mean, he knows what he's doing there. He's over. But you're right, there isn't really anything new for him to do. But he doesn't have to try too hard if he doesn't want to. You know, it's like putting on a comfy pair of slippers, isn't it? Only ones that are diamond encrusted in Randy's case.
Well, I think, I mean, financially, I understand why he's done it. You know, in terms of his wrestling, I can't lie and say I wouldn't have liked to see him go and get a fresh coat of paint in AEW or something. But I get why he's done it. It's a security thing. And I'm sure he's not going to want for money for a long, long time.
No. I mean, the thing is as well, is a lot of people out there have this sort of image in the head of wrestlers. I mean, I'm kind of guilty of this. We were talking about Cesaro last couple of weeks, and I'm like, well, Cesaro needs to leave. And as you rightly pointed out, you were the voice of reason, Kenny. You rightly pointed out, Finlay, what you don't understand is that, you know, Cesaro will be making huge money working for WWE. He's probably accepted that this is his role now. He's very well paid to do it. He's got huge respect in the industry. You know, people in the back know that he's a real talent. Potentially one day he could get another push. That could happen because we know he's got the talent to put it off. And if he's got to put a few people over this year and into next year, hey, he's going to go along with the program because he's been very well rewarded for it. You know, with Orton, I mean, he's getting paid huge money. There's no risk at all with WWE. I mean, the timing for him was beautiful with the new TV contract era just coming up. So I imagine he got a substantial raise. You can understand why he would extend his business relationship with WWE. I mean, in many ways, it'd be a huge risk for him not to.
So, I mean, we'll see if WWE put any sort of renewed vigour into him as a character. You know, I know the word was going around that he had pitched that he wanted to be in a team with the Revival, and they shot it down. So, I don't know, maybe they'll come up. Randy's always tend to be at his best when he's in a faction. Whether it's the Wyatts or Legacy or Evolution, he always seems to do better when he's got a few people around him to bounce off of.
Yeah, and I think to motivate him, I mean, the problem with the Revival is that they've just been, I mean, they've just been had all the life squeezed out of them recently. I mean, it's a shame to see what's happened to the Revival in recent months. So, I mean, I'm not sure if he would want to partner up with them now. And I imagine WWE will probably want to distance the two acts because, you know, Orton's, you know, top star, probably be getting another renewed push because now they've got him for another 5 years. And who knows what's going to happen next with the Revival. So they do seem to be going in opposite directions career-wise.
They do. So also, I mean, ever since we last spoke, ratings have been a big talking point with all across the board. We got AEW last week on week six. AEW did 822,000 viewers. NXT did 813,000. Obviously, NXT had the bump from being on SmackDown and Raw. I think the Bucks had said in an interview that the TNT expectation or hope was like 500,000 or 600,000, something like that. But AEW seemed to be, I mean, I don't know if we've seen them even out yet at a number, but what do you make of the numbers of week six? Do you think there's anything that needs to change on either show, or do you think we're kind of starting to level out?
I mean, as you said a couple of weeks ago, it'd be interesting to see how many viewers Dynamite draws this Wednesday, the week after Full Gear.
The following.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that will be a good indicator of what they are likely to draw on a good week. NXT has obviously received a bump from the NXT performers' profile on Raw and SmackDown. I mean, this is the thing that WWE has to its advantage, is that it can do things like this. It can send stars from Raw or SmackDown if it wants to NXT. It's got this massive arsenal of talent, you know, this huge reservoir of performers that it can bring in to give a program a boost over, you know, 1 week over a period of weeks. So, I mean, I think it's been a pretty good week for NXT for various reasons. We talked about that on the podcast last week. So, yeah, we'll see what happens this Wednesday. I don't know whether I want to read too much into it. But, I mean, you know, the way down from the debut, that's a long way from a million viewers. I'm sure they were wanting to hit a million viewers each week. So I think they're going to be disappointed with that figure. But let's wait and see what happens this week. I think that's going to answer a lot of questions.
And then also, we should also mention that WWE Backstage, they've done a couple of preview episodes in October, but the debut episode was Tuesday, November the 5th, last week, and the show ended up doing 49,000 viewers on FS1. Compare that with when SmackDown was on FS1 that one week, it did 888,000, so not even 10% of the audience for SmackDown FS1 watched it. I mean, to me, I think it's more... The main thing is, I just don't think that people who have... I mean, we've talked about it before. You spend a lot of your time watching wrestling, yeah? That's what you... If I had a full-time 9-to-5 job, and then I also had, you know, a partner or and a dog and whatever, like, I would struggle to find the time to make time for Raw, SmackDown, and AEW, for example. To even add in the NXT and AEW would be hard. So the idea that you even need to pick backstage as well, I just don't think people are going to have the time to check that. I think it's just burnout.
Yeah, I agree. And plus, it's not independent analysis, is it? I mean, it's kind of like... I mean, I didn't watch the show, I've got to be honest, but presumably it was some sort of recap show where they were talking about the events of recent episodes. Well, did you watch the show, Kenny?
I've watched snippets of it. I mean, they've got you know, Renee Young, Booker T, Paige and Christian. I mean, Booker T, he's done pre-shows for like 5 years, so he's kind of become this talking head that doesn't really add a lot. Christian's pretty good, but like, he just doesn't really feel like a big name anymore. So, and then Paige, I mean, she's decent, but I don't know. It just feels like, you know, you want to create the magic of talking smack with Renee and Daniel Bryan. I don't think that they've found somebody with Renee yet who's really found that groove with her.
Well, Renee doesn't really offer anything of substance either. I mean, you know, shouldn't surprise anyone that I would say that about her. But you've got a program there that's you know, not independent. It's not independent analysis. There's so many podcasts and websites and so many different things that people can be watching or listening to. And as you say, there's so much programming, first-run programming to watch that I think a lot of people find it difficult to fit it all in. Why would you add that to your schedule? You know, it seems superfluous to me. I think it's going to be a real struggle for them to draw a number. Maybe they'll start doing some crazy angles on there or some. I think they're going to have to do something that they'll then acknowledge on the main roster programming to convince people to at least give it a chance. Because as it stands right now, why would you watch that as well?
I mean, it's difficult because, it's not really got anything that's groundbreaking that you need to see. And then there's so much other stuff that why would you spend the time? I mean, you know, I think it was Robert said to me before, he was like, you know, the problem is that a lot of times, like I've still not watched The Wire. I'd quite like to watch The Wire at some point. But like, it's the commitment to watch The Wire is because like, I feel like now if I start a show, I have to kind of binge it. Because if I don't binge it, I'm probably going to not come back to it. So if I'm going to start binging, I don't know, The Wire, say that's like 2 months worth of time. When you've got spare time. So you want to, you say you watch, I don't know, 7 episodes a week, 8 episodes a week. Then you've got, you want to maybe socialize and go to the pub one night. Maybe go to the gym. You know, and you've got your job. Like, where do you find the time to watch these shows?
Well, you are right. I mean, you've got to pick and choose. You know, I've seen The Wire in its entirety and I would recommend it. I thought it was amazing. But you're right, it is a big commitment. I mean, I used to watch The Walking Dead. I gave up on it a couple of years ago. And I'm just thinking, and I've actually got loads of them on my planner, which I have never watched. And I think, oh, shall I watch them? It's like, nah, I just don't have the time. I can't commit to it because there's so many other things to watch that you know or at least think you're going to like. And The Walking Dead, they just lost me as a viewer because they just lost the way. So, but you're right. You've got to pick and choose right now. And if there's something that's, you know, kind of excess to requirements, that's not essential viewing, that's not a must-see, then it's going to fall by the wayside. And that's the way it is.
So we're not going to spend a lot of time on these shows because they were pretty dreadful. But we should talk about Raw and SmackDown and Raw. SmackDown from this past Friday, Raw from Tuesday. The shows that we were going to go to, Finn.
God, dodged a bullet there.
We were going to go in and we were going to pay money pay or sterling pounds to go and see Raw and SmackDown.
The tickets... I'll tell you what, Kenny. If we'd gone to see SmackDown and Raw, I would have probably broken my solemn pledge never to do a Jaeger bomb again. I probably would have needed one after sitting through this lot.
Oh my God. And the worst thing is that SmackDown, this show, we were watching it in America. We were back in the room because we had... So SmackDown was on at 8 local time on TV. So we had finished the panel with Cody at 6:30. We stuck around for an extra half hour, then went back to the hotel because we had to do edit and put videos up and stuff. And we put SmackDown on at 8, and about 9:30, I was like, do we have to watch the rest of this? Yeah. 90 minutes in, I was just like, this is garbage. So anyway, so the rating for the week before had been 2.5-something. 2.5 whatever. And Ollie had turned to me and said, surely this episode is not going to get more than last week. You know, last week having the great NXT angle and everything.
Yeah.
Really vibrant episode. No, this week had more viewers. 2.643.
It did. Not a bad number when you think about it.
How? Did people...
Well, maybe it was the word of mouth. Maybe people were thinking there was going to be an NXT invasion and a big angle and all these things going on. And that was, you know, one of the theories. That was one of the theories when you were in the magazine business. It's like, well, you know, your next sale is dependent upon the sales for your next issue is dependent upon how good your last issue was. And I think sometimes that is a factor in TV ratings because people enjoyed last week's. Let's try next week's. And like, because you were WWE fans, you know, and we've got faith. You see, well, unlike you gave up after 90 minutes. I sat it.
We didn't give up. I wanted to give up, but we didn't.
Okay.
We stuck
okay.
with it.
I apologize. But yeah, you want it to be better because as a fan, you do. So you watch it in the hope that it will improve. But yeah, it does. I mean, this show was pretty lifeless, really, and it drew a pretty good number. Be interesting to see what SmackDown does this week based upon how, you know, so unsubstantial this. I mean, it was just like, there's just nothing to it. It was just a wishy-washy show to me.
Can I tell you the one vibrant 60 seconds on the show?
Please tell me what that was.
Was when The Fiend attacked Daniel Bryan backstage.
Yeah.
That was the only thing on this show that was exciting, and you were like, well, that makes sense because they've got the history and there's stuff that The Fiend can, or Firefly Funhouse Break can bring into it. That was really exciting. Unfortunately, it was in the middle of this absolute albatross of a television show.
Yeah, that was like a tiny little island, a tiny little oasis in a sea of excrement. So, I mean, yeah, King Corbin opened the show.
He's top of the pile of excrement on this one.
Just went on and on, just never ended. Going on about Roman Reigns being a whiny little dog. And then they said on commentary, well, Roman Reigns isn't here yet, so he knows he can say this without fear of being challenged. And then that led into, do you want to comment on the
King Corbin
promo?
He comes out, he talks about, you know, Roman spends time at hospitals, takes time off with his family. You know, he's half the man, a step behind what he used to be. I mean, he did say that Roman's brothers in the Shield abandoned him. That was like one good burn within the rest of his rubbish promo. He was talking about the big dog's testicles. He shows Roman Reigns' dog logo and says he barks like a little ankle biter, and then the little dog on the screen does a tiny bark.
Yeah.
And then he's looking at the crowd. Like, this was a Manchester, UK crowd 1 minute into the show, and they were dead.
I mean, it was a bad start, wasn't it? It really was. I just never ended. I mean, it's like, how could this promo get over?
And then you think it can't get any worse. And I had sort of almost given up, and I was just on my phone because I was so bored. And Ollie was like, look, Corbin's got poop bags.
Oh, yeah.
And I look up, and you're laughing because it's terrible. He has dog poop bags.
Yeah.
Ready to scrape up the excrement and take it home as a souvenir.
Yeah, I mean,
Fox paid How much did Fox pay over 5 years for this?
Was it like nearly close to $1 billion or something like that?
God, take it for a mug, mate. An absolute mug.
Yeah, I mean that, you know, that island in the desert of excrement, the island in the sea of excrement, the oasis in the desert of excrement, you know, it's, I think, a pretty good analogy based upon what King Corbin was saying in his promo. But yeah, the material was terrible and he was just out there too long. And yeah, you're thinking, oh my God, that means we're going to have to watch another Corbin versus Roman Reigns match. Oh no, and that was the main event of the show.
Yeah, so we get this promo, which obviously leads to Roman Reigns challenging him. They have the match in the main event. Ziggler and Roode end up getting involved, which allows Corbin to hit the end of days. So Corbin beats Roman Reigns.
I mean, that at least was a surprising outcome. I didn't see that coming.
But that's not a good thing, though. That's like saying you went out for a steak and somebody came out and pissed in your face. That's a surprising outcome, but it's not a happy one. It's not like you wanted that to be the end of your steak.
That's it. I went out for a steak and someone brought me Angel Delight.
Angel Delight. That's a really great 2019 reference.
I think I had Angel Delight the other week. Stop picking on Angel Delight. Listen, that was like a staple of my childhood back in the 70s. You weren't around in the 70s, Kenny. You don't realise how bad it was back then.
Angel Delight is such a good reference. But the end of the show when it went off there and it's Corbin just beating Roman Reigns, it just didn't give you any reason to feel excited about the show.
No, it did. It didn't. And the only thing it was an unexpected outcome, which isn't really going to take King Corbin any further up the ladder than he already is, because we know that he's reached his limit. He's not going any further. We saw that over the summer when he was in the feud with Seth Rollins, that he's not going to be a main eventer. So in a sense, it was almost a wasted loss for Roman Reigns, which I'm sure he's going to avenge at some point. So, I mean, elsewhere on the show, I've got to say, Kenny, I found the Big E and Kofi Kingston match with the Revival, I just didn't move me at all. And like, Big E and Kofi are now the champs again, and Revival have lost the title. I mean, I feel sorry for the Revival. They were doing all right a few months ago, and they've just become this forgotten team. And one imagines it's going to get worse now they are ex-champions.
I mean, the New Day, you know, you've got Big E, who, God bless him, deserves so much better. You've got Kofi Kingston, who's not allowed to react to the fact that he got beat by Brock Lesnar in 8 seconds.
And all he needs, Kenny, is the power of positivity. That's what he said the next week. What's this?
Where the fuck did the power of positivity get you? Yeah. Squashed in 8 seconds. Yeah, so the revival lose the titles. And then that's the other thing. So it's like, you kind of like the idea of, like, you know, the Viking War Raider experience and the Undisputed Era and the Revival in a tag match. Revival are putting tweets out saying, don't sleep on this match. And then they get the titles dropped.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, what I think is happening is, I think the Revival have basically told the company they're not staying on. And, you know, the company keep trying to re-sign them and re-sign them and re-sign them. And they're not going for it, which they should not go for it. The Revival should absolutely leave, 100%. But I think that we can see little things that, you know, Randy Orton not being put with the Revivals maybe says that Vince doesn't want to put them with him because they're not re-signed yet.
Yeah.
They've got the belts, they're not re-signing, they're taking the belts off them. I feel like they're going to do everything they can to kind of just minimise them. I don't know when they're... I think their contracts are up next year. I'm sure it's next year sometime. But it's just sad.
Yeah, I mean, well, that is the way it works in the business. That is the way it always did work, is that if someone was losing, then they would put the people over who were staying.
That all makes sense. But just what I mean is, like, you've got the Revival who, you know, even say the Revival said, I'm going to stay, right? I'm going to stay in WWE. Like, what are they going to do with them? You know, they don't. The tag team wrestling isn't a big point in WWE. It's not a big thing that's pushed.
It isn't. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's up to the Revival, isn't it? I mean, WWE will probably offer them more money than AEW would. And do they want more money, or do they want to be creatively fulfilled? And the decision is theirs, and we'll find out next year. So, but right now, I can't imagine they're feeling creatively fulfilled in WWE. But, you know, we'll see what happens next year. I mean, if WWE, which is a stable company that you know is going to be around for years and years to come, is offering you huge money, it's very difficult to turn that down. So we'll see what they do anyway.
So elsewhere of the show, was there anything else we need to talk about on SmackDown?
Well, Ali...
Oh, Tyson Fury.
Oh, yes.
Made his return to WWE. Came out. Great to be home here in Manchester. Fuck off.
He's not even from Manchester. He's from near where I live.
He comes out. He says that, you know, he's got unfinished business. Calls it Braun Strowman. Strowman comes out. You wanted me. Here I am. Fury thanks him for the opportunity for one of the toughest fights he's ever had in Saudi Arabia. Right. Offers him a handshake. Strowman accepts. And then Fury said, you know, if we ever fight, it should be as a tag team. And Strowman said, there's no two people stupid enough to get all four of these hands. The B team come out. They get beaten up. Has there been a more lifeless celebrity in WWE? I almost think there's an argument that Snooki made more of an impact. This guy, like, I know he's a sports star, but he's absolutely diabolical. Why are they now going to be a tag team?
Well, I mean, I figure that they think that they gave us this match between Fury and Braun Strowman, which Fury won. So this is to try and get something out of this business relationship. So by teaming Fury up with Braun Strowman, who's already forgiven Tyson Fury, and they're now pals again. I mean, that transition didn't take long. Didn't take long for him to forgive Fury, and they're buddies again. Or buddies for the first time. So this is a way of trying to extract some value from all the money that they are paying Tyson Fury. Simply put, it's that. That's the reason they're doing this. I think I did predict this either last week or the week before, that this was the potential outcome of Fury's win over Braun in the match in Saudi Arabia. So, yeah. It does... To me, if you were going to do this, it would have been better if for Fury to disappear for a while. But there again, I think he's got a fight coming up. Is it in February? I think he's got a fight. So...
Yeah, he did. He mentioned it, didn't he? He mentioned he's got a fight in February.
Yeah, so if he's going to do something in WWE, it really needs to be this month because he'll need to start his training camp and prepare for that. But if they were going to do something, I think it would have been better for them to do it at WrestleMania. I'm not saying that would have been a big success, but at least it would have been on a big show. It would have felt like something significant for Fury to be involved in. It would have given Braun something to do at WrestleMania. As we know, he's not had a good track record at WrestleMania in recent years, has he, Braun?
No, he has not.
So at least that would have been a marquee match, and because they were paying Tyson Fury so much money, they would have promoted it. One imagines that the Fury Strowman team would have won. So I think that would have been the better outcome if this has to continue, rather than whenever these two are going to get together. Maybe they'll do some at Survivor Series. I'm not sure. Have they announced when these two are going to team up? I don't think that's been announced yet, has it?
No, they've not. I'm hoping for never, but I don't think I'm going to get my wish.
Yes.
Remember when celebrity appearances used to be good? Remember when that celebrity appearance would enhance the angle? Mr. T, Mike Tyson, even Floyd Mayweather. And now it's just... Like, there has not been one... Apart from that initial segment where Tyson Fury jumped the guardrail, all of the segments have just been really underwhelming and just really devoid of any sort of real, like, excitement.
Yeah, he doesn't feel like a star in front of the audience. The fans are not receiving him. They don't view him as a star. So there isn't that star aura there. And in order for this to work, he has to have that. And since he's not viewed as a star, then the whole thing, and obviously he's not going to be a proficient wrestler because he's only had one match. So the whole thing kind of doesn't work. And, you know, Braun and Fury teamed up to beat down Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel here. I mean, the crowd didn't really seem that into it. just seemed, I don't know, it feels like they're just prolonging the agony, doesn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, it does. I'm just, can we start a Kickstarter to keep Tyson Fury away?
I just mentioned Tyson Fury is actually from Morecambe. I thought it was from Hessbank. That was why I didn't state where he was from, but he's from...
My God, I mean, I've been to Morecambe, that explains a lot.
He's from a place just like 4 miles away from where I'm recording from now. So he's not from Manchester. So that didn't really work either, because I think most people know that he's not from Manchester. So, can we just end this now, please?
What, the podcast or the Tyson? Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye next week.
Let's move on to something. Well, I mean, we need to really just move on to something that's not SmackDown. So we can lift the tone. So lift the mood, Kenny. This is killing people's spirits.
Yeah, it's just killing their buzz. They're going to turn off and listen to somebody else. So, that was basically the big stuff that happened on SmackDown. And then we had Raw. And, I mean, Raw was better. It was, I mean, but that's, you know, not the highest of praise. We had Becky Lynch cut a promo at the beginning where she was talking about, you know, all the amount of challenges she's got. She's now going to be teaming with Charlotte against the Kabuki Warriors because they explained in commentary Natalia was unable to appear due to family obligations, which was a bit of a weird explanation as to why Natalia, who was in the match last week where she was the one that actually, you know, submitted the champion.
Didn't you? That's right, yeah.
So we got the Kabuki Warriors against Becky Lynch and Charlotte. It was very good. And, you know, it's funny to me that Asuka and Kairi Sane are the two women who did not have a match so far at Survivor Series. Like, maybe they'll get put onto Team Raw for the women. I hope they do. But they're very good professional wrestlers. And they have this match with Becky and Charlotte. And at the end, Shayna Baszler ends up jumping the guardrail and going onto the apron. Then Bayley attacks Baszler, so they're brawling on the outside, and Lynch then gets rolled up with the roll up of doom by Asuka. So the Kabuki Warriors retain their championships. Do you not think they could have thought of some move or some way to finish the match that wasn't just a roll up?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the most overused move. And I thought they moved on from that. I thought they just, like, that was something from 10 years ago or 8 years ago when the Divas division didn't really matter that much. It's now the women's division. And it's like, give these people some serious moves to use. And this was a long match. As you say, it was very well put together. I thought Asuka and Kairi Sane did really well. I think as a heel team, they are making tremendous progress. I'm really excited to see what they're gonna where they're at in sort of 3 months from now, and I'm hoping that WWE does go the distance with this team. I think they will because they don't really have that many other teams to hold the title, so I think they're pretty safe. And I'm with you there. I hope they're a big part of Survivor Series as well. But yeah, Shayna Baszler came out. She climbed on the apron. Becky Lynch rather gormlessly was distracted by her. I mean, why is it that baby faces are just like, they're just sort of paralysed, aren't they, by their heel opponents when they stand on the ring apron? It's like, why not just ignore her and concentrate on the match? And instead, she was distracted by Shayna, then rolled up and pinned. And then Bayley appeared and she attacked Shayna. And we had a bit of a brawl at ringside. So that was that. I mean, Bayley to me is not really... She's not really tearing it up.
You mean Karen from accounting?
Karen Maureen from human resources.
Did you see I sent you the thing that Becky Lynch had referenced the Karen from accounting thing on Twitter?
I did.
So good.
I did. Yeah. So, I mean, Bayley was very much an afterthought here, which is sort of her whole complaint about everything, isn't it? People are not taking me seriously. You know, I'm just like I'm the third wheel here. I'm the person that's not really the main event. I'm just excess baggage in this match. And she just felt like excess baggage. Sorry, Bayley.
I think the problem is that Bayley's new character is meant to be very, like, stripped back of all the happiness that she used to have. You know, she's a bit like an emo, a bit like a goth that you had at school. But the problem is that Baszler's got such a big presence, and Becky's, you know, one of the biggest baby faces in the company, that Bayley by default just kind of goes to number three.
Yeah.
But we had that opening the show. Drew McIntyre killed Sin Cara. Sin Cara, who's now asked for his release from WWE. So,
I mean, who can blame him? I mean, he's lasted in the company a lot longer than I think anyone thought he would. So it definitely does feel time for him to go. Has it been granted? Do we know if his release has been granted?
I don't think it has been granted.
But I mean, I can't imagine that WWE would have any objection. I mean, it's not like he's going to go to AEW and main event the next pay-per-view, is it?
Yeah, just let the guy go. We saw the official funeral for the WWE 24/7 title with R-Truth against the Singh Brothers. This is just dead. Dead, 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 dead.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, I mean, this is supposed to be a fun segment. I mean, the match was just like R-Truth versus the Singh Brothers. It's a handicap match. The Singhs ran away. They ended up in the women's locker room. Then they left and then went into a room. There's no lights on. The lights come on and Eric Rowan's in there. He beats them both up, but then there's no referee there. Strangely, there's a cameraman there, but no referee there. So he can't pin either of the Singh Brothers to capture the title. Then R-Truth came in and just said, you need some space, you're busy, I'll leave you to it. And he left, and then the lights went out. Just kind of sucked all the... I mean, I was not really a huge fan of the 24/7 title, but that little modicum of entertainment value that it had has been flushed away.
There's something very vitriol about how you said that. Flushed away. Anyway, so we then got Seth Rollins coming out on the show. He cuts another boring promo because, you know, Seth Rollins, he doesn't come across in any way likable, you know? And he bangs on. But he basically says he wants to face the United Kingdom's best. This brings out Imperium with Walter there. And Walter said, you know, you wanted the best, here we are. Walter said that Imperium is restoring honour to the sport. And then Rollins, of course, being the babyface who knows how to make his opponent look good, says, Rollins says he appreciates Walter challenging him man-to-man and thinks he's the best in the UK. And he said, that little title around your waist might mean that you're right. So he diminishes the UK title. Great. Good job, Seth. And it brings it to Seth versus Walter, which only goes a few minutes because...
I mean, this should have felt like a monumental match, and it just didn't. And I was watching it, I was thinking, are my eyes deceiving me? Or is Seth Rollins battling Walter? I mean, go back and remember the Walter-Pete Dunne match from the TakeOver event? It just felt like a WrestleMania main event, or at least a WrestleMania main event before WrestleMania was 7.5 hours. WrestleMania main event doesn't feel like a WrestleMania main event anymore. But I mean, Rollins and Walter, I mean, should have felt huge. And it just felt like it didn't really matter. It was like Cedric Alexander versus Andrade. It was just, which I think we also got on this show. So, I mean, it was just a match that just didn't really feel important at all. And I was really quite disappointed to see that. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, but then how many people... I mean, I'm curious because obviously they're going to go with this 5-on-5 match Survivor Series. And Walter and Imperium, I guess, are going to be the sort of the NXT team. But how many people really on who watch WWE know who Walter is or know the story? I mean, they watch Raw. I mean, the UK crowd knew who he was enough because, you know, he's been around the UK a lot, has wrestled most parts of it. But it didn't feel like Walter was. You remember there was the Raw in Manchester, and the one we were at where Pete Dunne made the surprise appearance.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And people went mental.
They did.
It was like, you know, a main eventer had turned up, and they don't see Walter and Imperium on that level, which is a shame.
It absolutely is. I mean, from what I understand, Seth Rollins, when he came out, was booed out of the building and they changed the soundtrack. They just muffled all the boos, kind of like what they used to do with Cena. So I mean, it's possible that Walter and Imperium provoked a louder reaction than we heard as viewers. But they had to remove it because in the process of removing the booze for Seth Rollins, they had to also take down their reaction. So it's possible it could have been connected to that. But yeah, I mean, it just this should have been a huge match, and I can't believe they just gave it away here, and it just felt inconsequential. So that was a real shame.
And it went a few minutes, and then Imperium jumped in, and then the Street Profits ran out to help Rollins. Kevin Owens came out; he got a huge pop. And we were told that Team Raw were standing tall at this point. So, which I don't think the Street Profits are actually on Team Raw. I think Team Raw is going to be Rollins, Owens, Drew, Ricochet, and I can't remember who the fifth one is. Who's the fifth one? Orton.
Yeah,
Orton. So, we end up getting an 8-man tag with Seth, KO, and the Street Profits against Imperium. This was actually pretty good. I like this. I like some of the sequences in it. The Street Profits are really kind of finding their own as a team. I like them. Owens is packing a bit of a punch again. The fans are really behind him. Yeah. Seth Rollins remains tedious. But I thought Imperium carried themselves pretty well for their first appearance on Raw. And I thought they felt like they could be an act that could be on Raw one day and would be able to perform to that level. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Montez Ford, I mean, we know he's the star of the Street Profits team. He did this unbelievable dive. I mean, I think it woke Jerry Lawler up on commentary. I mean, he had no idea who Walter was. He had no idea who any of these people were. I mean, that's just Jerry Lawler. I mean, he's just like blatant about it. It's just like, God, it's just, can you not just wing it so we don't know that you don't know what the hell you're on about and you don't really care? Ah, Lawler's way past that point now. But yeah, I enjoyed the match. I mean, the fans got into it. Rollins pinned Alexander Wolf after the curb stomp. What amused me afterwards, I'm sure you spotted this, Kenny, was Montez Ford shaking the ropes like the Ultimate Warrior. Did you see that afterwards?
I did. I mean, you know, it's the sooner we can get that rope shake away from that cretin and onto somebody else, then, you know, let's let Montez Ford take it over. Let him move it on.
He did it better than the Ultimate Warrior.
Exactly. What else do we have on Raw here? So Andrade beat Cedric Alexander. We have Aleister Black doing a promo in front of a dark screen, a backdrop. Apparently Aleister Black has got a knee injury, but they want to keep him on TV, which is why we're still seeing promos. Now I'm gonna build us here to the segment I want to talk about. So we saw the Viking Raiders beating Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster in a non-title match. Which, you know, it was about 3 minutes, but I don't know, it seemed a bit weird to just put one of your NXT UK tag teams in there to just kind of get beat. But
I mean, huge size difference as well there.
Mm-hmm. And then the main event was Randy Orton, Ricochet, and Humberto Carrillo against the OC. And Carrillo actually got the pin on AJ Styles. And then after the match, Orton kind of teased going for the RKO and Ricochet, but stopped. Orton told him, you know, he does what he wants, when he wants, and whoever he wants to do it to, told Ricochet to remember that. So, tease and dissent between Orton and Ricochet leading into Survivor Series. We also get Eric Rowan beating a jobber. But the segment that we want to talk about is, of course, Lana had a shocking revelation. And she tells us that she is pregnant. She is 9 weeks pregnant. She only started having sex with Bobby Lashley 7 weeks ago. She believes in monogamy, even though she's an adulterer. That's fine. Brings out Rusev. She just screams at him for basically no reason. Starts slapping him repeatedly. Bobby Lashley comes out. Lana hops in Rusev's back. Is trying to eye rake him. Lashley beats him up. And then Lana screams, "I cannot believe he thinks I was pregnant," to Lashley. Then they make out. Please just give me all your thoughts, Finn, on this.
I mean, the promo, it just went on and on. I mean, it was rambling. It was worse than disjointed. It was incomprehensible at times. She was just contradicting herself. You know, who cheated first? I mean, can anyone remember who cheated on who first? I mean, can anyone remember that? Does anyone care? No one cares. I mean, Rusev, when he came out, didn't really seem like he believed that Lana was pregnant. I mean, I think he cottoned onto to it being a ruse before it was revealed. Lana was just all over the place. You know, at one point she's taking a shot at the working class people of Manchester. She's telling the audience that they're not very bright. And I'm sure everyone in that audience is thinking, you're not very bright either, because this promo makes no sense at all. So, I mean, she's saying that she was embarrassed because she fell down last week and started going on about taking a load of abuse on social media, and had anyone in the audience had to go through anything like that. I mean, what was this, Kenny? I mean, was it a rib on Lana? Was it a rib on Rusev? Or was it a rib on all of us, the viewers? I'm figuring it's the last named. I'm figuring this is a big joke on us all. You know, we're the butt of this joke, Kenny.
Well, I mean, first of all, Lana and Rusev went home, which was their first mistake, because it was always going to be, they were always going to get their comeuppance for that.
Yep.
Then there's also the idea that, so when Lana started this promo, did you notice that she had to say the stuff so fast because she was clearly trying to remember the script that she was supposed to say?
Yes.
And she was like kind of fluffing her lines.
Yeah, she was all over the place. I mean, there was so much. There was so many lines for her to remember that she was really struggling out there. I mean, she was doomed from the off, let's face it.
Now, why does she still say Rusev in a Russian accent, but nothing else?
I don't know. It's like when she says that, she has to adopt that accent. And then she reverts to a normal accent.
But if you want unintentional comedy, right? I didn't know this existed, but we found it the other day. So Lana / CJ Perry has her own YouTube channel. And it's just her doing videos with people. So like there's one with her and Lacey Evans where Lacey Evans is helping her show how to apply makeup. And then there's one with her and Bobby Lashley where she's like, so Bobby, how long we've known each other. And he's like, you really want me to go into that? And then she like brings up Trump. And she's like, I don't care what people think. I'm going to talk about Trump. You were in the Battle of the Billionaires. What do you think of it? And if you think she's bad on television, the YouTube channel, she's mental.
Like, I have seen one of these videos that she did, and I believe in that one she spoke in a normal American accent. There was no attempt to put on the Russian accent. So and like why she even bothers anymore, I do not know. Maybe she can't help it. Maybe it's like an instinctive thing, something that just takes over. I don't know. But you're right, yeah. I mean, Rusev and Lana left, and then Rusev was trashing the company on Twitter. It was just one shot after another. Some of it was hilarious. I mean, this guy is so witty. I mean, he's just tremendous. And not you from the ones, the tweets I've said, he's usually not offensive either. And there's a real answer to that, in putting people down without offending them and just using a lot of self-deprecating wit. I thought it was just tremendous. But you're right, yeah, there was obviously going to be a price to pay for that behaviour, because WWE feels like it needs to establish rules and boundaries. You know, at least that's probably its excuse for the reason it's foisting this on us, the viewing public. I'm hoping that this Rusev and Lashley match takes place at Survivor Series, Kenny, and it just over after that. We just want this to be a one pay-per-view feud. Do I speak for you there, Kenny?
Wholeheartedly, Finn. Wholeheartedly speak for me. But, you know, we're in this weird spot where we're going at a Survivor Series coming up, and, you know, they've added NXT. And at the beginning, I was like, oh, yes, this is great. This is, like, you know, really, it's going to be a really, really good addition to the team. And a couple of weeks down the line, and I'm not really feeling that much excitement for it. Like, I'm looking forward to Brock and Rey Mysterio, the women's triple threat match I'm really looking forward to, but the tag triple threat match I'm not really that excited about now that the New Day are in it. AJ Nakamura and Roderick Strong doesn't really fill me with excitement, because AJ and Nakamura are known for having pretty boring wrestling matches.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other 5-on-5s, I mean, now that we found out that two members of Team SmackDown for the women are going to be Carmella and Dana Brooke.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, they defeated was it Mandy and Rose and Sonya on SmackDown last week?
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, it's like, I don't know. I mean, why are these? I mean, you know they're going to be eliminated really quickly. So it is an elimination match, right, Kenny? I'm not just making that
it
up.
It is an elimination match. And actually, yeah. It actually brings me into, we actually have a listener question, which I thought we could ask right now off the back of this. And it was, Neil Mackay, is there a place for a traditional Survivor Series today where every match is a team match? I thought it differentiated from other pay-per-views and it was a nice feud star. So where do you think that the traditional Survivor Series, is there a place for it today?
Well, of course there is. There's a place for most traditional WWF / WWE match concepts in WWE in 2019. Absolutely there is. You've just got to arrange them correctly. You've got to book them for a reason. And the reason they work is that you create something there and you have an outcome that takes people somewhere. I mean, I was always a huge fan of Survivor Series years ago. It was always a pay-per-view that started feuds or extended a feud or dropped hints of a feud that may begin at Royal Rumble. But this was back in the day when they used to do long-term planning. And they do that to an extent, but nowhere near as much as they used to do. So absolutely, Survivor Series can achieve something. The problem is we're in this era now where we've got so much programming and so many things taking place that subtle storyline developments kind of get lost because there's such a barrage of other things going on. So, but yeah, absolutely, Survivor Series can matter, and Survivor Series elimination matches can achieve the same purpose as what they used to if WWE scripts them to achieve what they used to. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I think there is a place. I think the problem is that they've kind of, a lot of the traditional concepts they've got have not really been that effective in recent years, you know. So if they can do anything in 2020, it's my hope that with things like the Royal Rumble and the things like Hell in a Cell, like Money in the Bank, make them mean something again. Make them be worthwhile. Make the follow-through story good. And we'll see where it goes. Now, before we get to our listener questions, Finn, I do have two things that are just unbelievable in each way. So, you know how Jim Cornette is not a huge fan of AEW? He's made that clear, right?
Yes.
Or elements of it. So Jimmy Havoc, somebody had tweeted out, a guy called Ian Stewart, he wrote, just got DM'd this scoop by someone I trust. Because remember there was a supposed fight between Excalibur and Jimmy Havoc this past weekend in Baltimore?
It was okay.
Like they had a scrap one night and Tony Khan was there. But Tony Khan had said at the scrum, he was like, look, they had a thing, it was fine, next day they shook hands, it's not a problem. Anyway, so this guy Ian Stewart had written, just got DM'd this scoop by someone I trust. The fight between Excalibur and Jimmy Havoc was apparently over Havoc posting this picture on his Instagram of Excalibur unmasked. Shocking scenes unfolded upon hearing the news. Now the problem is the photo that Ian Stewart attached to this was a photo of Jimmy Havoc a few years ago with EastEnders actor Phil Mitchell. Which I have just sent to you on Facebook if you want to see the photo while we're recording this. So then
I did hear about this.
Jim Cornette got in on this action because he thought that Excalibur out of his mask was Phil Mitchell. Because he didn't know who Phil Mitchell was, he just thought that was a photo of Excalibur. So now Jim Cornette thinks Excalibur is Phil Mitchell. And it's just the best thing ever.
Oh, this is, I've changed my opinion of Jimmy Havoc. This is brilliant.
So good. Anyway.
Someone must have notified Jim Cornette by now.
Oh, yeah, I think they have by now.
Of who this really is. Has Cornette responded yet? Do we know Cornette's response?
Should we see if he's responding? Let me just pull up Jim Cornette here on Twitter. What is Jim saying to this? Going through all of his gun ones.
So did they actually end up having like a?
They did have a scrap. I don't know.
This did happen then. When you tell me that story, you kind of think, well, was the whole thing like a, you know, a storyline or something for a little bit of publicity that didn't really happen?
The scrap did happen. I don't think it was over a photo of Phil Mitchell, sadly.
No, I'm sure it wasn't.
I can't find Jim Cornette's response. I don't think he's responded to it. The other thing is, so I don't know the name of the program, so forgive me, but you know, there's all these programs like Who Do You Think You Are, and like they delve into your past. And they find, you know, Finn, you were once related to a Nordic king or whatever, you know, whatever it is they find.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You've probably seen this.
It's Ant and Dec Overload at the moment, isn't it? In the run-up to I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, which is one of ITV's biggest shows. And I think does that start this Sunday? I believe it does. But it's all sort of connected to that, isn't it? The DNA show.
Yes.
Who are you related to?
So, do you know where I'm going with this?
Oh, of course I do, okay, yeah. Good. It involves a former TNA boss with the initials DC.
So apparently Deck of Ant and Dec is cousins with Dixie Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, what world are we in? Like, what would your reaction be, Finn, if you found out that you were related to Dixie Carter?
Well, I mean, it's great, but, well, my... I don't know. Hey, maybe I'd get an interview with her. I never did get an interview. I'd say, come on, Dixie, do an interview with me for Inside the Ropes. You know, and I'd start off softly, softly, and then, well, that interview may be terminated early, you know? So I thought Dixie would like some of the questions that I would have asked her. But, I mean, it's an amazing story. Apparently genuine... hard to believe, but apparently genuine. I'm sure Dixie loved it. I mean, she was always, I mean, she was a mark for the spotlight, wasn't she? I mean, she absolutely was. She loved being the center of attention. And when they made her a regular character, she thought that was brilliant. I mean, I didn't think Dixie was actually a bad heel character, to give her a due. But I imagine she just thought it was the most amazing thing that she's related to one of the most famous mainstream entertainers in the UK. I think that's fair to say.
Dixie, this will shock you. Dixie actually did tweet about the situation when it had been publicized. She says, yes, Declan Donnelly is my cousin. He's absolutely charming, handsome, witty, kind, everything you would hope. Adore him. And of course, Ant too. Be sure to check out the finale of the Ant and Dex DNA Journey, ITV at 9 p.m. She also went on to say that Declan Donnelly is my cousin. It's not a wrestling storyline. Dec's fabulous. Ant too. Bin Har keeping this a secret. Hashtag family. Hashtag cousin love.
Yeah, I mean, it's... this is genuine, unlike the Claire Lynch saga, you know.
She loves it, doesn't she?
She loves
a bit of spotlight.
Of course she does.
Poor Serge.
Well, yeah.
For various reasons, poor Serge. But that's another story.
I mean, it was covered by a lot of the mainstream sites, and some of them referred to her as a wrestler because there was an image floating around of Bully Ray powerbombing her through the table. So people just assumed that she was a former wrestler, which, you know, obviously she obviously took a bump in that angle. But I don't think anyone with any knowledge of the subject would describe Dixie Carter as a wrestler.
No, well, it's funny, just very quickly before we do a couple of last questions, I actually said to Awesome Kong when we were over, I was like, you know, can you believe that, you know, Dixie Carter let Hulk Hogan leave TNA and the lasting image was him trying to leave and her, like, grabbing him by the leg and not letting go? And she, like, laughed. She thought I was joking. So I showed her the video on YouTube. I wish I'd filmed it.
She wasn't aware of that. She never watched that segment.
No.
I mean, I thought it was quite apropos, really, because it just showed, you know, what a mark she was for Hogan. I mean, it was absolutely, totally, very fitting, and one of the realest things she ever did on that program.
I'm a mark for Hogan, but I've got my limits. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Jesus. I mean, yeah, it was, in many ways, yeah, absolutely true to life. And, you know, you can't say I admire her for any of that. period of TNA, because it's just really impossible to look back on any of it with any sort of fondness because of how much money they lost. But I mean, at least she sort of demeaned herself on the way out, and it was kind of fitting, really. Yeah, probably one of the realest things, one of the most authentic things she ever did on that program.
Okay, so let's do a couple of quick fire listener questions. Random guy 616 asks, any wrestlers that should have done a having a baby together angle but didn't? Savage and Liz. That should have been the heel turn for Liz. Liz, of course, was faking it. That would have been the story. She'd have turned. WrestleMania 9, Hogan is the heel, Liz in the corner.
Well, that's it. I don't know. Whenever I think about this, I'm just reminded of some things that happened during the Attitude Era, and the ending of those angles was always really distasteful and unpleasant.
Are you saying you think that there could have been a better ending to Mae Young giving birth to a hand?
Well, as that, yeah, and other ones as well. But generally, when these storylines are implemented, it doesn't really have a happy ending. So I don't really want to see any more of these storylines again. Thank you. So, I mean, at least I was quite relieved when Lana left Raw, because when I first heard about this, I wasn't aware that Lana had actually said at the end, I cannot believe that he believed I was pregnant, and that was on camera. So I was so relieved that this segment ended with her saying that it was all a ruse. So that was about the only good thing I can say about that segment on Raw, that at least this will not move to another stage, and they'll have to book the way out of it in a way that's really just not a very nice thing to witness. So, yeah.
We also got Nikki, who wants to know, post-Vince, and I guess when he retires or is no longer booking WWE, if AEW continued to make gains against WWE, could you envision WWE making a play to hire Cody as a producer?
Well, what gains are AEW making? I mean, the ratings are going down. Full Gear didn't sell out. They're having trouble selling tickets to the weekly events. So where are these gains being made?
I mean, I guess the gains would be in the demos. They've got more of the 18 to 49 demos than WWE. I think if they ever hire Cody back, it would be... this is a hard question, because basically the question is kind of hinging on Vince dying, essentially, because we know he's never going to leave any other way. But I could see Cody going back as a wrestler at some point.
He turned 34 in June. So, I mean, he's still got probably 8, possibly 10 more years in the ring. So the idea of him retiring to then become a backstage player, that's not something that's going to happen for a very long time. I imagine it's something that he would envisage himself doing, because I think he would like to continue to be involved. But I mean, we've no idea what's going to happen with AEW. We've no idea if it's going to be around 5 years from now. If it isn't, I imagine that WWE would sign him up. Absolutely, they would do. And maybe in 8, 10, 12 years' time, he'll become a producer. It seems it's a hypothetical question that isn't going to be answered for so many years to come.
Nikki's thinking of the long game, Finn.
Well, that's true, yeah, and that is admirable. But as far as AEW making gains, it's not making gains. In fact, it's declining. So let's see if AEW can make some gains first. I think that's what they're going to be concentrating on. It actually reversing the numbers and getting them back up again.
Yeah, tomorrow will be a big test for the number.
Absolutely.
George Booker, thoughts on Savio Vega. I'm not deeming that with a response. Wrestle Colour, should Cody regrow his 2012 mustache? No, he should not.
Yes, he should.
Andy Connolly wants to know, Finn, with AEW having an obvious thin roster, if you could just throw out a couple of names who you think they should sign that would be good signings and would help them kind of make some gains. See what I did there?
Very good. Are we talking about from WWE? The first one, obviously, Tessa Blanchard. Now, Tessa is no longer with Impact Wrestling. has Tessa announced where she's going next? Because I think I'm sure she's through with Impact. I think that's right, isn't it, Kenny?
I think you're a few more weeks behind in Impact than you think.
Ah, right. So she hasn't left Impact Wrestling yet. Ah, I apologize for that. I am a little bit behind there on Impact Wrestling. I thought she had left the company. Well, Tessa Blanchard is one, even though I've now just completely humiliated myself with that response. I apologise. If the scatological references earlier weren't bad enough. Yeah, Tessa's absolutely...
She's a great shout.
Absolutely. I mean, who else is that? I mean, there's so many people in... There's so many people in the WWE system, and this is the position WWE's in right now, where it's signing up all this talent and they're not really doing anything with it, and partly to prevent other companies from hiring those performers because they could be valuable to them. I mean, there's not a massive amount of talent out there that's really going to make a difference.
I think they need a couple more veteran, like big name picks. You know, they've got Jericho, but like, I mean, like, Xavier, if Mysterio came up for, you know, I think his contract's up next year.
Okay.
Having him for a couple of years could do wonders just for sort of name recognition. They have got a lot of people who've got some potential, you know, like Luchasaurus and Darby Allin and MJF and all that kind of stuff, but they do need big names to work with. So having a couple other big names, even somebody who is 40 or whatever, if they have a big name and you can use them for a sort of short period of time to put people over, it's not the worst idea.
No. I'm not sure. The thing is, if the Revival, we were talking about this earlier, if the Revival decide to leave when their contracts expire early next year, then I think they could be useful. I think Luke Harper could be somebody who could come in and play. I don't think they've got that many guys in or women in AEW who are really playing like dark characters. I think Luke Harper could be somebody who could really excel there, playing, because we know how good he is on promos and WWE seldom allowed him to speak. So I think Luke Harper could be somebody who could, I'm not saying he's going to be a difference maker, but he's somebody who could be valuable and work with the younger performers. So I think he's somebody who's going to be available in a few months. So that's a realistic option. Unless, of course, you're going to tell me, Kenny, that he's just re-signed.
I'm not. Don't worry. You've still got it, Finn.
Thank you. I mean, if Finn Balor decides to leave, I mean, I don't know whether we've worked out whether he's extended his contract with WWE.
Nobody knows.
Because, I mean, he signed in 2014, didn't he?
He did.
That's when he signed. So we're on 5 years now. So it's normally they sign 3-year contracts. So it's possible that his deal will come up next year. So I think Finn Balor would be a huge steal for AEW. I think most people would agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw what he did for The Fiend at SummerSlam. I mean, just one of the best performances I've seen this year from Finn Balor. So, you know, Finn Balor was so amazing in that SummerSlam match. Absolutely tremendous. And because she didn't really notice him, because all the emphasis was on getting The Fiend over, which was absolutely what happened. So I think Finn Balor would be a big acquisition for AEW. Do we need to select any more?
No, I think we're good. Okay, two last questions. We've got Stephen Ross, who wants to know, assuming Ronda isn't returning soon, who can you envisage would be taking the title off Becky, and how far down the line can you see it happening? Other than Charlotte, there's nobody in the Raw roster even close to her level, so I would assume it would be an outsider or a call-up. What do you think?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think Shayna right now, she's viewing this whole angle that she's doing with Becky Lynch and Bayley as her job interview for a main roster spot and potentially being the one to dethrone Becky Lynch. Because, I mean, they brought Ronda Rousey, you know, in the sit-down interview they did last week, Ronda Rousey's name was brought up there and Shayna said, listen, I'm not Ronda, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I think she really came across and issued a real sense of threat there, projected a real sense of threat. And I'm hoping she's going to have a really good showing at Survivor Series. She could be the one. I mean, Io Shirai, I mean, she's tremendous, absolutely fabulous performer. To me, the best wrestler in the best female wrestler in the WWE system. Tremendous heel. But I don't know. I'm not sure whether Vince is going to really be on board with her. I'd like to believe that he would, give her a chance on the main roster because she's that good. I think most of us agree with that. So I would say the two most probable candidates from the WWE system would be Shayna or Io Shirai. But again, you know, if they can hire Tessa Blanchard, she's somebody that absolutely, you know, is good enough to defeat Becky Lynch. I'm sure she's somebody who could get herself over and the machine could get her over. And she could be a huge star in that system. So that's three people, and two of them are realistic. One, well, we'll see what happens with Tessa. For all I know, Kenny, she could be an Impact Wrestling this time next year. I mean, would I have even noticed?
Okay, so I'll give you two names. I think, well, three. I'll do three names. Asuka, it could be Asuka if Asuka is somehow able to get out the tag team by, you know, the spring. The boring answer would be Charlotte, which is possible. But I think the other option is there is something in the idea that Ronda comes back and is the one to beat her. You know, if Ronda beats her at Mania, and you know, then it's one all essentially, and you can build to the rubber match. That's an option.
I mean, the thing is, with the way that the match ended at WrestleMania, I mean, you almost do feel that that's what it's leading to, because that's a ready-made story and a huge match at WrestleMania. So I'm not sure if he's willing to come back or not. But, I mean, that, I'm sure, is what Becky Lynch wants.
And not one person in WWE on any brand has shown anywhere near the sort of, like, to me, the real intensity that Ronda Rousey showed when she was on that show. Like, yeah. She just, like, was a different level. The last question, though, is for you, Finn. So I think you're going to have to really think about this. It's from Cameron Sykes. Finn, whose ring style do you prefer? So you have to pick one.
Right.
It might be that you hate both, but you just hate one less. But yeah, whose ring style do you prefer? John Cena or the Young Bucks? Sophie's choice, isn't it?
I'll tell you. I mean, only Cameron could hit me with a question like that. I can't answer. I mean, I may need some time to digest that one. I mean, I think probably the Young Bucks, because as we saw at Full Gear, and by the way, we did a full review of Full Gear over on Patreon. I hope you will check that one out.
Yeah, that's up now.
I think the Young Bucks, when they're toned down, I do prefer them to John Cena. But I mean, when they're doing the crazy flips, it's just so unrealistic. And as for John Cena, well, I don't think I need to go over it again, do I? I think it's got to be the Young Bucks. It has to be the Young Bucks, because they're definitely a team when they're in there with the right opponents and they're telling a certain story. They are. I do prefer them to Cena. You know, Cena obviously had some good matches as well. We discussed that in the past. But I'm going to go with the Young Bucks. Are you going to answer this question? Because I think I already know the answer from you.
It's difficult because I really loved 2015 John Cena when he was having those US Open challenges. I thought he was great. But, yeah, who'd I prefer? I would probably say I prefer Cena slightly, because if Cena's in there having the match with the right person, then it feels I can more get into that style than the Young Bucks style, because the Young Bucks tend to do more of the flippy stuff more often.
Yeah.
But then again, Cena's call spotting is one of my least favourite things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It really is Sophie's choice. I mean, I guess I'd have to say Cena, because I've preferred more of Cena's matches than I have the Young Bucks. But then I've not seen as many Young Bucks matches. I'm going to have to say Cena, though. So, there you go. Finn, God, I think we both need a shower after that question. what are your plugs?
Well, I'll tell you what, we were put to the test there. I mean, congratulations on those questions. We really struggled with some of them.
I know. Well done.
And we should be challenged here. You know, we should be challenged. We don't shouldn't get an easy ride on the Power Slam podcast.
Just like Dixie Carter, she should be challenged to find new ways to get in the spotlight.
Exactly. Hey, just think, maybe she'll be on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. What do you think?
She would love to do that show. I bet next year it's coming.
Hey, Deck will pull a few strings. Maybe she'll end up on Britain's Got Talent next year as well.
And we're not even going to talk about what her talent would be. So, what are your plugs?
There are no plugs, Kenny. You do your plugs.
Oh, okay. Twitter, KennyMC1985, Inside_the Ropes, Finlay Martin. You can get tickets to our future shows with Mick Foley or Kenny Omega, insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets, youtube.com/insidetheropes for bonus content, interview stuff with Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, Darby Allin, Luchasaurus, Eric Bischoff, SCU, Hangman Page, WB interviews, loads of stuff up there, so go check that out. And also patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you can get this podcast 24 hours early, an overrun. There's an over 70 minute AEW full gear review where we go in deep to a lot of the matches and angles on the show. And the Bret Hart interview will be up later this week. Quite a few pages on that. I think it's four, absolutely. So that's going to be well worth checking out, where Brett talks about some different topics that he didn't cover on the tour with me. So there's a lot to check out. And of course, go to finlaymartin.co.uk, where you can pick up Power Slam, the interviews volume 2 with the Honky Tonk Man, which Finn has never brought up to us in any form of detail. So
thanks for bringing that up. Thanks for alerting people, Kenny, to the existence of that interview, which I have never previously mentioned on this podcast.
And and as per my contractual agreement with Finn, once a year I need to play out the podcast, not with the Power Slam podcast theme, but with the Honky Tonk Man's WBF theme, Cool, Cocky and Bad, to remind you that it is part of Power Slam, the interview's volume 2. So here's the Honky Tonk Man. We'll see you next week. Got long sideburns and my hair slicked back. I'm coming to your town in my pink Cadillac. I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm cool, I'm cocky, I'm bad. I pick a mean guitar, I wear a blue suede shoes. You ought to hear me sing the snakeskin blues. I'm just a honky tonk man.